These professionals, these experts, they are driven with this combination of intellect and compassion to help others. So I always tell other pod leaders or anybody, I gladly share whatever it is that we have done.
Welcome to the Plant-Based DFW Podcast Weekly Show with Dr. Riz and Maya, a show broadcasted from the Dallas-Fort Worth area that focuses on lifestyle medicine. This is the use of evidence-based lifestyle therapeutic approaches, such as a whole food plant-based diet, regular physical exercise, adequate sleep, and stress management to treat, prevent, and oftentimes reverse lifestyle-related chronic diseases that are all too prevalent. Every week, they feature a guest who speaks on one of these lifestyle medicine pillars. This show is for you, the person who is seeking to improve your overall wellness and quality of life. So whether you are driving, walking, or relaxing at home, we hope this show will provide you one more tool for your wellness toolbox. Let's meet today's podcast guest.
Welcome back to another episode of the Plant-Based DFW Podcast. I am Maya Acosta, and this is episode 142. In this episode, you will meet Sally Lipsky. After a diagnosis of late-stage cancer, Sally learned about the power of plant-based eating. This changed her life's trajectory, and she became a plant-based nutrition educator and author. In 2014, she began Plant-Based Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as a way to offer much-needed support and connection among those adopting a plant-based lifestyle. The pod now offers twice-monthly topical programs via Zoom, with cooking demonstrations, which you can also find on their YouTube channel. The monthly newsletter and Facebook page are also filled with rich ideas, events, recipes, and information. Let's hear from Sally.
Wonderful to be here. It really is.
Sally, before we start with your story, because I know that you're a cancer survivor and I'd love to hear how you overcame that and how you're doing today, let's talk a little bit about PAC and your role. What subcommittees are you part of?
Well, I'm part of the Pod Network Operations Subcommittee, and our mission is to provide the internal support for the pod leaders wherever they're at, and to just engage them and provide them with resources and ignite them.
Yes, that's a wonderful subcommittee to have. I've said in the previous interviews that a lot of us had built this wonderful momentum with our own community, and then 2020 hit and suddenly we feel like disconnected. So
absolutely.
Having this PAC committee, I feel, is going to kind of re-energize, recharge everyone. I myself feel very motivated now to kind of pick up where we left off and move forward in the best way that we can, whether it's still online or maybe in the near future, hopefully in-person events. So Sally, right now you're in Pittsburgh. Are you originally from Pittsburgh?
I'm originally from the Pittsburgh area, and I had moved away for a while and went to school and got my undergraduate degree in elementary education and taught in Texas. And so then I came back to Pittsburgh where family is, which was a big draw, and ended up getting a degree, getting my doctorate here at the University of Pittsburgh and getting a job in the area. So,
you know, I always wonder how people come to this way of living, you know, the plant-based lifestyle. During your upbringing, did you ever have any kind of awareness? Did anyone introduce you to this way of living?
Absolutely not. I was brought up through childhood and through adulthood, eating what the standard American diet and what was considered the healthy, and probably still is actually, the healthy standard American diet. I was very aware of what our healthcare systems and media had up there. You want lean protein, chicken, fish, and lots of dairy. Yes, women need their calcium. So lots of low-fat dairy products throughout the day. And hey, I thought, the lifestyle, I was getting regular exercise, I would do my recommended medical exams and procedure. And then the big shock happened. And I tell women this was a month after a clean bill of health from my gynecologist, my annual exam. 1 month later, I was diagnosed with late stage ovarian cancer. So that was my big wake-up call. My transition didn't happen immediately because I didn't know immediately, but I went through the standard care. I went ahead and surgery immediately. Then I started the standard rounds of chemotherapy. But I was keenly aware of the prognosis of late stage ovarian cancer. The reason being, number one, that it tends to be very resistant to chemotherapy. And number two is it tends to come back most frequently and often within the first 24 months. So within 6 months, I was officially got the thing, the call that I had no sign of active disease, but I was still through every checkup, every blood test, every scan, I was like waiting that thing. It's going to come back. When is it going to come back?
How old were you when you were diagnosed with cancer?
I was 55 and I had two teenage daughters at home. And at that time, I resolved to myself, I'm going to do whatever it takes to go through the treatments, to live. I wanted to be at ease and as gracious with what was given me, what the situation I was in with my teenage daughters. But I was still looking like my oldest daughter was in senior in high school. It's like, oh, please, I want to see her graduate from high school. So you still get those when you're faced with your own mortality, you tend to get those as we hear those milestones, especially when you have young children still at home.
Yes, I often wondered about cancer survivors, if there's that kind of fear that kind of always lies there.
Every nick, every little pain, as I said, I tend to be an anxious person and to begin with, but that just spiraled my anxiety. The night before I had to do a scan, I was a bundle of nerves.
A month before that, you had received a clean bill of health. How did that diagnosis happen in the first place? Were you already kind of feeling some pain, some fatigue?
Well, it's so interesting. It is called, ovarian cancer is often called the silent killer, or one of the silent killers, certainly because there isn't an easy way to diagnose this at this point. I started to get lower abdominal pain. I thought it was a urinary tract infection. I called my doctor. They ordered a round of antibiotics and it didn't go away. So what happened next is I called my doctor again. They sent me they said, you should just go to see your PCP. I was calling my gynecologist and fortunately, there was another PCP on call and she took me very seriously. And I say that because I know other cancer patients, ovarian cancer patients who have waited so long to get the proper diagnosis. But she took me very seriously. She sent me for a sonogram and they saw a mass and she said, it's most likely, it looks like it's just a cyst, but we're going to do blood work just to make sure. And so the blood work for ovarian cancer, the protein is CA125. Which is normally a good range, is under 35. Then when I got the call that it was in a 2000, it was way, way high. And so it was cancer. So I went to see an oncologist again, that whole fortunate that had a wonderful program at my local hospital with a great team of oncologists and went through the surgery. And then, as I said, shortly after that, started right immediately into the chemotherapy.
Does surgery include like a hysterectomy or?
Oh, yes, hysterectomy. They could see the cancer was in my bowel, was in my abdomen. So they had to clean out that. There was a spot in my abdomen they couldn't get, but my appendix was out. So yes.
Wow.
Immediately went into menopause. It was from start to finish, it was 6 months. Because I remember it was Valentine's Day when I had my doctor's appointment and the blood work and everything. They said, there's no sign, the sense of relief was, can't describe it. But as I said, you still were in active testing, active blood work, regular scans, and then appointments with the oncologist. And I was moving along. I had back at my work. I was working as a professor of education at a state university. So I was back at work. And then I'll just tell you my aha moment was there was an article in our local newspaper about a doctor, David Sherman Schreiber, and he was working at the University of Pittsburgh, the medical center there, and by happenstance found out that he had a small brain tumor because he was doing research and the subject didn't show up. So he told his colleague, I'll just go ahead and get the scan. And they found out it's a small brain tumor. And he eventually wrote the book, Anti-Cancer, The New Way of Life. And I read this article and I said, wow. And part of that article is he had talked about what he had learned about the impact of lifestyle on cancer, and in particular, food choices. So I immediately got the book, read through it, and that just, I had to learn because I'm an educator at heart and I wanted to learn more. And that jump-started my journey into plant-based eating. I would go online. I would go to read books. I would end up going to conferences and just learning more and more and the power of food. And of course, T. Colin Campbell's work with the China study. And I ended up getting my certification from his Center for Nutrition Studies. And then I wanted to put, as I said, I'm an educator at heart. We had to spread the word. Yes, we have to let other people know.
That's where the passion comes from, right? Like, that's why we do what we do. We're pod leaders. We create our own organizations. It's that passion to share something that is a benefit to us. You just can't keep it to yourself. You have to share it.
Yes, I end up writing this book because it's called Beyond Cancer, The Powerful Effect of Plant-Based Eating. But I wrote it and I put it in my foreword that I had to dig for this information and other cancer patients and survivors shouldn't have to dig. And so this is my, as we said, when we work in the plant-based field, those of us, the zeal that we have is because we have to share. Yes, it's a mission.
You initially began that research on your own. Was there a particular book or film or physician that you saw that stood out initially and kind of pulled you into doing more research on plant-based nutrition?
It was probably the T. Colin Campbell, okay, who I have such great respect for, and his work with cancer in particular, early work there. I wanted to connect with everything and learn so much. So I would be traveling to Washington, D.C. for a day-long workshop. Went to Florida for, this is the Esseltons, their first one of them, they were doing these weekend immersions. The North American Vegetarian Society had their vegan summer fest near here. So Michael Greger would usually be the keynote speaker. So all the big names. And what touched me was that these professionals, these experts, and then we can get into Nelson Campbell and his work also, but they are driven. They are driven with this combination of intellect and compassion to help others.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about your curriculum that you put together. Your bio says that basically it's designed, or at least you outreach and educate oncology nurses as well as physician assistant students. How do they obtain this curriculum? Do you go in and work directly with them, or is it offered at the university level?
As I got more and more confident, I would be teaching, I would give lectures at community centers, local libraries. I would teach these adult school, non-credit adult school courses. I would just try to get the information to people, but in a very approachable way, because that's where my education came in, that emphasis on how adults learn. And so it just happened that in somebody who was working at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, a nurse who a nurse educator, found out about the work, and she asked me if I'd be interested in just coming up with a curriculum that these nurses could do 20, no more than 30 minutes at a time in their breaks, and they can get some credit for it, their continuing education credit. It would be an option for them. So what I did, I took it from the information I had and made various modules, starting with why is eating plants? You've got to start with the why, the reason, and lay it out very simply. And as I said, make it very approachable and streamlined, because the time is just of an essence there. And then what is it? How can you do it? So personalize to themselves and then to patient education, and give them the tools to do that. So I think there was 10 modules. And so this nurse educator put it up for the oncology nurses as an option, one of their continuing education options.
This is the information they're not taught.
After years, we think, oh yeah, of course it does. Yes, you got to start with the basics. We know there's a difference between vegan and whole food plant-based, but even with the vegan population, when I give plant-based eating the basics, when I talk about that and give my presentation about it, you just see, oh, wow. Right.
So let's talk about your pod. So it sounds like you were already sort of plugged into this information and then became more of an advocate, it sounds like, for like cancer patients. So how did that get started, your organization?
Actually, it was probably around 2014, because I was teaching at the local library. I was teaching like a 3-class course on plant-based eating, the what, why, and hows. And after that was done, one of the women in the course said to me, now what? We need some ongoing support. And I was like, of course you do. So I started this support group. And I initially had 12-year emails. I remember that. And to this day, I probably have around 1,600 people. And so that's how it grew. A lot of it, every time I did a presentation or did something, a course, or I got emails, and it just kept on growing and growing. And then the pod network, I was part of it in 2015 when Nelson Campbell, Pittsburgh was one of the tours he did for the Plant Pure Nation. I was on the committee there. We had a full auditorium. We saw it, talked to him. And then there was part of the committee. It's like, let's set up a Pittsburgh pod. But it had fallen into, as we know, it became very lax, as what tends to do. People get swept away in their own work and whatever. So that's when I contacted Plant Pure Communities and said, hey, I'll take over the leadership. So we sort of melded both of those, whoever was in the pod already with my group, and we became Plant-Based Pittsburgh.
Do you have a co-leader, and did you find other people to help you organize these events? Because a lot of times it can be so much work on one individual.
It can be. I ended up taking early retirement from the university because, as we know, this is where my passion is. And I was fortunate enough that I had healthcare, so I could do that. But it does. It's a lot for one. You get to the point. And yes, this is one of the reasons we've been able to expand and work. We have always the pre-COVID and then we have the COVID. That's the line here. But pre-COVID, I got to the point where we could offer in-person meetings. I'd always do in-person meetings because I live east of the city and do it there. But through Connect, meeting people and finding some more people who are really into it, one woman was able to lead in the Library South. So we had a Plant-Based Pittsburgh South group. We had a Plant-Based Pittsburgh, there was a physician North that we used his office. He used his office for his monthly meetings. And then we had a city group, another physician, a family practice physician, who led a group there. So we were clicking away there with each leader would come up with a topic or something they wanted to provide. One thing that's been really important for growing my pod and publicizing is the monthly newsletter. So I put out this monthly newsletter that I tried to make very colorful, very reader-friendly. But then a combination of publicizing events, but also I call it news you can use, and also recipes, lots of recipes. So that has been a good way to have a month-to-month common communication that I think it really helps keep the pod alive. And I always tell other pod leaders or anybody, I will share whatever. That's why I like being in the group about internal support. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. I gladly share whatever it is that we have done.
And I'm so glad that you brought it back to that. There are resources that Plant Pure Communities, the website, has already for pod leaders in terms of what the philosophy is behind nutrition for the organization, and some movies, like a list of movies to watch and books to read and all that. There are those resources. But then coming back to the more practical resources from actual pod leaders who are getting started, I think those are so beneficial. Some pods are more potluck based. So they used to kind of meet up at a pod member's home where it's spacious and people can get together. And some are more educational based, like ours was more about screening documentaries and bringing in speakers and offering lectures. And then there's some that are more action oriented, where they go out and participate in the restaurant initiative and they're outreaching or maybe working with gardens. So a pod can be whatever works with the community and where you're located, because I think that also plays a big role.
Absolutely. And I have to say, this is why another reason I'm so glad we have this advisory committee, because we know that COVID has been startling and difficult, such a challenge. But I, thinking back, it has offered us these opportunities that we wouldn't have done, the Plant-Based Pittsburgh, if it wasn't for COVID. Because then we started to go with, okay, virtual, which we don't know. But these two we do since May of 2020, we've been doing twice monthly virtual events through Zoom. And one of them is an educate a topical, whether a physician talks about gut health and bacteria, or we had our last one was a gardening from a local member who's really into gardening, an excellent one. And the second one has always been a cooking demonstration, because people love cooking demonstrations and they want recipes.
Yes.
Okay. And they want to see how it's done. And so that provides us with this opportunity. I mean, we've had people from, sometimes I'm puzzled how they find out, but they do. People from Canada, Oregon, and Montana, these regulars. So that has provided us with a greater, in some ways, outreach. And I tell other pod leaders, our speakers, if you want me, one of the topics that I'll gladly do a online or a virtual with your pod. So I hope to do that, the advisory committee, we can come up with a resource guide of other pod leaders and other speakers that they can get some, ignite them around a virtual group there while we're still doing the pandemic. And as I said, some more very practical resources ready-made for them to set up.
I'm so glad that you're bringing that up as well. And I was just thinking, you already covered the virtual aspect of how you pivoted in 2020 from in-person events to now going virtual. You'll be submitting some photographs of what life was like before COVID. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
So before COVID, we would do, you can see it, we were a beautiful, loving group, and everyone still says, oh, I miss her in person. I know it's difficult, but in the summer, we're going to try to do more of it. So we did in 2018, I wanted to go bigger and I wanted to do more hands-on work with day-long workshop. We called it a summit. And I had a group of women working that I became close to, brainstorming, and I realized we needed some money to get an event. So I was really determined. So I thought, these grants, local healthcare, you really need to become a nonprofit. And so I amazed even myself, because I'm not an accounting person. my brain doesn't work that way. But it's not difficult. We became a 501c3. So I did all the paperwork for that. And that gave us nonprofit status, where we can ask for money. We can do proposals. So we had put together, oh, and then we have members of a board that there's a nurse practitioner, there's another family practice, lifestyle medicine. There's six of us. We call us the Whole Food Plant-Based Sisterhood. So we put together this day-long summit that for April of 2020, we had sent out publicity. We had physicians on board telling their patients. We had the money down for location, everything. And then COVID, of course. So that's where eventually we want to pick that up. So it's not all, I think people get tired of the Zooming and the virtual. So that is what we want to pick up. And the other thing I have to say during COVID, it's made us more keenly aware of the inequities in our communities and the people who are suffering so much. Mm-hmm. So we started last summer, we did connected with two different local food pantries and did food drives, and then came up with, I'll send that photo, because we also did for community. They have an emergency food pantry that hundreds of families go to. And there is a lot of health issues in that community. So we were able to do some sampling, give them recipes, and then we have packages with the ingredients for these recipes. So we're continuing. That director asked us for this year to do some more food demos. So that's a good partnership and community outreach that we're looking forward to.
So Sally, was your nonprofit affected once COVID hit?
Yes. We're an all-volunteer organization. So we asked donations to help us keep going, and people are very generous. They, when we have some of the, like they sometimes they have Give Pittsburgh, I think other cities do that too, giving days, and people who appreciate the work and understand and appreciate what we do, they open up and it keeps us going. Yeah.
There are expenses related to educating people about this way of living.
I helped one group get nonprofit. So it does take initial money to get that nonprofit status. But yeah, so I always tell people, if I can do it, you know what? The sense of community is vital. I always think back to, I think it was a 2014 survey Humane Council did on people who reverted back, not who started with eliminating the animal products and then reverted back to eating meat-centric meals. And the number one reason that they did that was because they felt so isolated. They felt removed from their families, their friends, their day-to-day life. So I think about that, the importance of finding like-minded people or open, kind, and want to work together to learn more and to do, even if you don't go all the way, we want more plant-based eating because we're creating communities of health. That is key. So it is a very motivating, self-perpetuating to keep the communities going.
I completely agree with you. I think that's part of the sense of despair that I felt when we were on lockdown. And I realized that many of the people that attended our events have conditions, either have had heart disease or heart attacks or strokes, have been trying to find a better way of optimizing their health. And then suddenly we're all disconnected. And I had this sense of like despair of, gosh, people were getting on board with this and now they won't have any support. And thankfully, there were other people that are very active in the community that started streaming live, that started being available, like chefs.
A couple things come to mind. Number one, making it approachable, as I said, but also simplifying it. And that's always been, we need to keep it simple and we need to keep it practical. And that's another reason I really like the Nelson Campbell and the work he's done with Plant Pure Communities, with that sense of it's not rigid, it is practical, and it's something that media, you can just try things. It's creating a culture of go ahead and take a risk. You feel comfortable sharing. I took a risk, it didn't work, it didn't work. But also knowing there's people that you can enjoy this with. Because food should be a sense of joy, a sense of pleasure. So we don't want to make it inflexible. We don't want to make it complicated. We want to make it to the fact that a common person could come in with no background, but you can. It's just step by step. There's some guidance being offered, information guidance, but you want, bottom line is try it out. Yeah, put it into action and see what happens. If you want to see what Plant-Based Pittsburgh is, go to our website, plantbasedpittsburgh.com, or email me at plantbasedpittsburgh@gmail.com.
And where can people find your book?
My book is on Amazon, so you can buy it through Amazon, the paperback or the Kindle.
Do you have anything, any kind of Zoom events that are open to our listeners?
Absolutely. All our Zoom events are open to anybody. If you go to their website, you can, yeah, anybody can register for our Zoom. And if you go to our YouTube, you can see past events.
Okay, so finally, as people might be listening, we might have some pot leaders who kind of want to be, you know, we want to reignite and encourage again, or we might have people that are interested in starting their own pot. Is there one thing that you suggest to them to get started towards maybe building a sense of community?
Find one other person. Just start with one other person and keep contact information. That's important because you want to keep their contact information, their emails, so that you can keep adding and adding and adding, because soon that one person will add another person, another resource, and another. So I would like to see, this is sort of how I think about it. I think of that plant peer community, that worldwide map they have of all the pods, where you have these, how things sort of light up when there's energy, those little balls. So there's light, it's all across the world. It's lighting up because each of these pods is like energized and they're doing things and they're reaching people. I wrote an article several years ago when Nelson Campbell had the magazine about some of the, my suggestions for starting a pod, the steps, of course, that was in person, finding a free. But again, if somebody wanted to email me at Plant Based Pittsburgh, I'll be glad to share that with them.
Wonderful. When we got started, we didn't know anyone that was plant-based. I learned through YouTube about this world. And then people just start coming out and suddenly it's like, wow, there's a bunch of us that we didn't even know each other. And we're in the same area. So
yes, I know. Isn't it? It's very satisfying.
That's another thing that I wanted to kind of add is the benefit of joining the POT network under Plant Peer Communities is that we get to meet each other. We meet other leaders. We sort of support each other, re-energize each other, give each other ideas and things like that.
And we hope with this pack is to create more one-on-one so that we can have connections with very local, small group leader connections where we just do a chat and a brainstorming, and maybe more one-on-one where a leader that has more experience will just chat with a newer leader and give suggestions and ideas and sort of walk them through.
Well, Sally, it's been such a pleasure getting to know you. And thank you so much for this opportunity and the time that you took to talk with us.
Well, it really was a pleasure. And thank you, Maya. Best to you.
You've been listening to the Plant-Based DFW podcast show. If you like our content, please like, share, and leave a review. Our goal is to provide quality episodes to help support the community.